I've been there many times.
So here we go. Okay, and my guest is, wait, hold on. Let me just make sure we're up and running here. I just need to check one more thing. Ah, there we go. Okay. Welcome to the program, Charles Moskowitz, Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern Standard Time. You know, I think I'm the only podcaster who is actually not only doing this thing live regularly, but I actually take phone calls. 617-396-4958. If you'd like to join the conversation, 617-396-4958. The chat line is also there at Rumble. This is going to hear a little bit of my my bumper music here. Let's see.
Sure.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, very good. And you're welcome again to chat on with me at Rumble. You can send in comments. Bruce Merrin is my guest. Bruce is a legendary figure in the public relations business. He's owned Bruce Merrin Public Relations and ATV, which is at BruceMerrinCelebritySpeakers.com for 46 years. Bruce, you've had all of the major clients, including several presidents of the United States, people in entertainment and sports. Talk a little bit, Bruce, about how you got into this business.
Oh, I'd love to, because I'll tell you, I owe everything to my beloved mom. My mom is 98 years old. She turned 98 December 21st. And I'll tell you, she had a legendary PR firm in Hollywood in the late 60s. And she was one of only two women that had a Hollywood-based PR firm. And What happened is I graduated from UCLA, the film school. I had a really prestigious job at MGM Studios in the Thalberg building, a great job. Okay. And my mom, who is always so close to me, she called me at the MGM studio. She says, Bruce, I know that you're happy there at MGM, but my PR firm at General Service Movie Studios is really growing. I would love to have you join me at my firm. And it was an easy decision. Even though I was leaving MGM, my mom always had meant everything to me. So literally, she changed my life because she really taught me the business.
Oh, that's amazing. And you know, you have the kind of personality and the kind of drive that it takes to kind of get out and get people in front of the right situations. And that's not easy. You know, that takes, you know, it's hard. One of the hardest things to do, and anyone who's involved in any kind of sales, actually, the hardest thing to do is ask someone for something and to, in a sense, present something in such a way. And it takes a lot of creativity to really make them believe that they're going to benefit.
And I have a great story. Here's a perfect story. You did the lead in there. It wasn't planned, but here's the perfect story.
Yeah.
Michael Landon. I met Michael Landon thanks to exactly what you were saying.
Right.
At the General Service Movie Studio where Mom and I were, we heard that Michael was going to be filming a role at one of the studio lots. So I decided on my own. I was young. I was probably 22 at the time. I went to the studio lot. I went into that taping area where Michael was. When he finished a scene, I approached him. I gave him my business card. I said, Mr. Landon, I loved when you were on Bonanza. I used to watch it every week. Please take my card. If I can just invite you to lunch, please think about having lunch with me. Mm-hmm. 2 months later, he called me. He said, Bruce, I was impressed. Let's have lunch. And at the lunch, he says, I'm working on this real exciting new TV show. It's called Little House on the Prairie.
Wow.
But my point is, because of the attitude that you said, if I was shy, I never would have met Michael. I decided I wanted to meet him. So you're really right.
Yeah. The other thing that I've noticed is that you do your homework. When you approached Michael Landon, you had seen him on television. You understood him. You really thought about it. You knew the background. I remember reading that Ahmet Erdogan from Atlantic Records, the reason he was able to land the Rolling Stones was because he knew every lyric on every record they ever recorded.
Yes.
And they were impressed by that. And they're like, oh, you know, this isn't just someone, this isn't some Schmendrick out here trying to put me, you know, he actually understands what we're doing here. You know, he really cares. He's taken the time to get into our heads and to really figure out what is it that makes this person who they are and how can I help them advance, you know, get out into opportunities that would nurture that.
Yeah, no, you are absolutely right. And so anyway, so Michael became my client. So that same year, when I grew up as a kid, we used to go to Ebbets Field in Brooklyn to watch the Brooklyn Dodgers, okay? So I was a huge Dodgers fan. I had the opportunity to meet Jackie Robinson,
one of my biggest heroes.
So when I met him the first time, just like with Michael, I said, Jackie, I used to go to Ebbets Field all the time. You were my hero. We shared so many stories, and he became my very first sports client. But again, I knew so much about him. It really helped when I met him because he could tell I really had such care for Jackie. So you're right. You know, it makes such a big difference.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, my guest is Bruce Merrin, public relations extraordinaire. Bruce, you have been able to reach presidents of the United States, both as candidates and as presidents. Talk a little bit about that. What were they like, and who did you work with?
Yeah, well, the very first president was President Reagan. And I must tell you, we had an office in Beverly Hills. And as soon as he got out of office, I knew that I wanted to represent him because in the speaker's field, we want to work with people that are charismatic, that have a great story to tell. From my point of view, whether they're Republican or Democrat, sure, that doesn't matter. It's, are they somebody who the people connect with? So anyway, I met President Reagan. He had an office in Century City, right close to Beverly Hills. And I met him and we really hit it off. I said, President Reagan, I've been such a fan of yours. And I'm a UCLA film grad. I loved you when you were an actor. And so anyway, so he was the very first president and we probably booked him about 10 times and he was wonderful. He was absolutely great. Charismatic, wonderful. And from there, every president thereafter, you know, President Ford and Carter and Clinton, I mean, name all of them. But he was the very first one. So that really made it very, very special. Yes.
Well, once you had that reference, the door would open. And also, I mean, Reagan was a very good public speaker. I mean, that's how he, you know, he toured for, was it General Motors in the, not General Motors, GE in the 1950s.
Yes.
He honed his skills as a public speaker and he studied very deeply into conservative philosophy and William F. Buckley and a lot of thinkers at that time, Russell Kirk, some of the great 50s conservative thinkers who basically created the conservative movement.
So you are absolutely right. Yes.
And he knew how to, so he could really move on his feet very quickly. And there was one debate that he had. I don't know if you were connected to this. I think it was in 1964. He debated Senator Robert F. Kennedy. And he absolutely cleaned the floor with Kennedy. And Kennedy was no slouch. I mean, we're talking about another brilliant speaker and a great mind. But everybody kind of, Reagan was always underestimated. They always felt, oh, he's an actor, you know, bedtime for Bonzo. You know, they didn't really. So I think that he was able to use that to his advantage because.
No, you're right. And he was so sincere. I'll tell you a story to give you an idea of his character. Okay. Mm-hmm. This was really wonderful. One of the first bookings, I booked him for Bank America in Los Angeles. And he showed up. It was a big annual group. And anyway, he was great. He got a thunderous standing ovation. We're the presidents, when they finish, the Secret Service, they storm the stage and they want to whisk him away over to a limousine. When these Secret Service people were on the stage, he held up his hand like this. He says, now, wait a minute, guys. I think these people have some questions for me. Mm-hmm. He stayed there for nearly an hour answering questions. So instead of just rushing off, he had made his money and, you know, but that's the kind of character that he had because he cared about the people in the audience and he wanted them to really get the full experience. So that always stayed in my mind what a wonderful person he was.
Oh, yeah. And he liked that kind of interaction. I mean, he actually thrived in that kind of atmosphere, whereas some people, you know, like I would think Richard Nixon, he didn't want to talk to anybody.
Right. No, you're right.
he would deliver his thing, and he kind of always looked rather surly. Whereas yes. Reagan, you know, a good politician has to know how to smile.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the public figures, they all learn this. I mean, in fact, I think Nixon was vehemently ridiculed because he always was scowling. He never learned. I mean, more recently, I think of Dick Cheney as another one. Very sour, very, you know,
right. So,
you know, it doesn't matter, male, female. It's like you have to be able to project. Barack Obama, whether you like him or not, he had a very nice smile. He really was very charismatic. I mean, I think that Biden's smile is very phony, but nevertheless, he learned how to do it. And he's like, you know, with has his teeth all put in his head, you know. But either way, they all learn how to do this.
Well, another one I'm just sharing. When I was at UCLA, one of the saddest days of my life at UCLA was, unfortunately, when President Kennedy was assassinated. Oh, I was on the campus. But talk about a smile. That guy,
very, very,
I mean, he was so charismatic, you know.
Right. He was. And Clinton was one of the best, best in our generation. I mean,
I agree.
He could work a room. I think Clinton patented himself after Elvis.
Uh-huh.
You know, they always said Elvis is in the room. You know, he would soak up all the energy just by showing up. And it would be, you know, he was very magnetic. And
he's wonderful. And I got to share with you, because I booked him, I guess, maybe 10 times. His best friend from college, I believe it was Georgetown. But anyway, his best friend lives here in Las Vegas. The gentleman's name is Brian Greenspun. Okay. And he used to stay with Brian and his wife rather than a hotel. He stayed with them. But anyway, I booked him many times and he was just great. I mean, the crowds loved him, you know, because again, he was just very charismatic, had great stories to tell.
Right. I mean, you know, I think with him, the trick was that he knew how to like look you in the eye, and he probably learned this. But he would make you feel like you really mattered, you know, like he was really paying attention to you, whether he was or not, it's another subject. But the point is that as a politician, he was very skilled at doing that. You know, he could connect.
Totally agree. Totally agree with you. Yeah. And just as a side, when we were talking about Reagan, Michael Reagan, his son, I book Michael Reagan, his son, for speaking engagements. I was talking to Michael earlier today. So thanks to President Reagan, I now work with Michael Reagan.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'd love to have him on my show.
Oh, sure. I'll be here.
Now, what about Donald Trump? Did you work with him?
We did. We booked Donald Trump. In fact, some of my old color flyers, it has the picture of Donald, you know, back maybe about 15 years. And again, you know, it doesn't matter what people think politically, he's
great. We're talking about people. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's a great speaker. And I probably booked him maybe a dozen times. He always was wonderful. People loved him. And I'll say this, with all the presidents, every one of them, they were charming to work with. It wasn't like there was this big ego and cloud over and made it so difficult on me. All of them were really nice to work with.
Oh yeah. I mean, well, that's what they do. I mean, that's their agency that they connect with people. And I mean, I think Trump in particular, I mean, he would do radio and constantly be up at 5 o'clock in the morning doing radio shows and TV shows. He made himself available for years, going all the way back to, he became a public figure, I think, in the 1980s or 70s even.
You're right. And by the way, the way I met him, we used to book people all the time on Larry King Live. Larry became a really good friend.
Oh, what a great host, yeah.
I used to have breakfast with him at Nate and Al's all the time, Larry. And Larry said to me, this goes way back, would you like to meet Donald Trump? I said, are you kidding? So at Nate and Al's, that was his hangout. Larry always went to Nate and Al's for breakfast.
Sure.
So that's how I initially met Donald Trump at the time. And then I wound up starting to book him. But it was thanks to Larry King.
Oh, I remember Larry King used to do a show at Duke Ziebert's in Washington.
That's right.
Where he actually had like a little studio off to the side. And
yes,
he was a genius. And the thing I think that about Larry King is that he appeared to be tossing softballs. People criticize him for that. Oh, why don't you ask him about, you know, the policy in Iraq or, you know, like really tough questions. But yet he would get someone to say a lot more.
Right.
And talk radio is it's almost like listening to a telephone call. I mean, it has a voyeuristic element to it.
I agree.
Yeah, and you know, by disarming someone and letting them start to talk because they felt relaxed, Larry King could get a lot more out of someone, even a very bad person. You know, he would interview the Ayatollah Khomeini. I mean, you know, but he would get a lot more out of them than if he came in with his fists and started to hit them over the head with.
You're absolutely right. And I'll give you an example. Not only Larry King was a great listener, the other one who was my client as well was Johnny Carson. Johnny was a genius. But if you notice in his interviews, he didn't interrupt. He was a great listener. Johnny listened. And all the celebrities, when I'd be at, you know, at the Carson show, they say, I love so much that he listens and he doesn't interrupt all the time. And he lets us tell our stories. He's a great listener. And I think that's a real art for these people, the Larry Kings and people like Johnny Carson. If you listen, you can draw a lot more out. So you're right.
Yeah. And I think that in the case of Johnny Carson, he was, not only did he look like he was listening, but he really was listening. And he would formulate his next question and he would engage in a conversation based on very much what was happening at that moment. He didn't come in, you know, some people, I mean, I know that from doing talk radio over the years, they want to send me talking points and they want to do a rehearsal. You know, no, I don't do that. You know, I want to have a relaxed, spontaneous, informal conversation, because that's what is real. You know, that's what's happening. That's when you find out who someone is.
I totally agree. And by the way, and when you were talking about my speakers bureau, it was thanks to Michael Landon and Johnny Carson, because the story, and I think you'll get a kick out of this, I was with Michael Landon at the Tonight Show. Mm-hmm. And when it ended, Michael Landon was always one of Johnny's favorites. So Johnny comes backstage, sees me and Michael. He says, guys, how would you like to come to my place in Malibu and have dinner and we'll have some wine?
Wow.
And again, I was a young kid at the time. Johnny knew me because I was there a lot, but you know, I wasn't real close. So that night at his home in Malibu, he pours some Cabernet Sauvignon and he's toasting us. And he says, Bruce, I know you have a PR firm, but I think you should have a celebrity speakers bureau. And I said, well, Johnny, I think it's a good idea, but I'm a PR guy. So Johnny says, I'm going to make it really easy, Bruce. I'm going to be your very first client. And then Michael chimes in, I'm going to be your second client. And then Ed McMahon calls me the next day. That's 46 years ago. That is how my celebrity bureau started.
Oh, that's incredible.
Isn't that amazing?
You know, I think it's amazing that you would even, I mean, Johnny Carson, I understand, was a very private person.
Yes.
And a very complex man and a very shy man.
He was.
In private. So to my way of thinking, it's amazing that you got to even know him and go to his house and break bread with him. I mean, that's incredible, Bruce.
It was one of the biggest gifts of my life, because I've had my celebrity bureau thanks to Johnny. Now, of course, Michael Landon was my client and he was there. That's what opened the door. Mm-hmm. But I was so blessed that Johnny saw something in me to make that suggestion 46 years ago to start my, you know, celebrity bureau. So anyway, I owe a lot to Johnny, but I don't use this term loosely, but when he was on TV, he really was a genius, you know? Was a comedic genius, and then not a lot. Robin Williams would be one, I'd say, but there's not a lot.
No. Yeah. I mean, he had classic timing and he knew how to carry himself. He had elegance. What do you think about the crop of late night talkers now? I mean, you are still booking people, I'm sure, on all of those shows, you know, the Jimmy Kimmels and them. I mean, I think that Colbert actually recently has gotten better. Maybe it's not that Trump's out of office. He's not obsessed with Trump. I mean, they were caught. It got so repetitive and unpleasant and
serious.
All they did was criticize Trump. Now that he's gone, I mean, I think he's maybe relaxing a little bit and moving into maybe he's a little bit more himself. I don't know.
No, I agree with you. And Jimmy Fallon is one that I really enjoy. I mean, of course, because the nature of our company, we deal with all of the shows, but I enjoy what Jimmy Fallon does. You know, he has that gift of comedy and, you know, likes to ham it up and, you know, sing and have some fun.
Sure.
But all of them in their unique ways, they add something, and it's fun to deal with all of them. Jimmy Kimmel, he's from Las Vegas, right here in Vegas. He was born and raised in Vegas. So I've always enjoyed working with Jimmy Kimmel. Yes.
Well, he's he knew show business way back when.
Yes.
And understood how to do it. Did you work with the big radio talk show host? Did you work with Rush Limbaugh at all?
I booked him a few times, and I'll tell you, Rush was a class act. I booked him. I booked Sean Hannity, but certainly Rush was the giant. And so I would say maybe five or six times I booked him, and he did a great job. You know, he too, I mean, I don't have to tell you, great communicator. Mm-hmm, yeah. The audiences loved him. One time I booked him right here in Vegas at the MGM Grand. At the MGM Grand, they have a big amphitheater. It's like 17,000 people, and Rush spoke in that big amphitheater. So the talk radio people are good as well. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Rush is one of those people who I think went beyond simply talk radio. And he actually, I think, changed the culture. And he's almost like the father of modern conservatism.
Oh, yeah.
In many ways. And also, it chagrins me to say it, but Howard Stern is a brilliant talk show host.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
he gets people to say the most personal things, you know, by disarming them before they know it. I mean, you watch, he tosses in a little, you know, softball in the middle of a conversation. And before you know it, someone is talking about their intimate things. And it's amazing to watch how he disarms, I would even say, disrobes a person.
Yeah, no, I agree. I had a fun situation here in Las Vegas. Jennifer Flowers moved to Las Vegas. She knew that I, you know, was probably the top PR guy in Vegas. So she came to me. And of course, I think for your listeners that don't know, there was that affair with President Clinton that was talked about. So when I went to Howard Stern, oh my God, I actually went to New York when he did that interview with Jennifer Flowers. But everything that you're saying is true. He got her to open up so much more than probably she would on a regular show. So you're right. I mean, he does have that gift, you know?
Right. And he kind of, I wouldn't say he's sneaky about it, but people forget where they are with him. It's like, before you know it, I mean, I think that he did an interesting interview in that way with Paul McCartney. Mm-hmm. You know, he got him to open up about stuff about the Beatles that really he had never talked about before.
Right. No, and I agree.
It makes them comfortable. And they, before they know it, they forget that they're all, you know, talking to millions of people, and they just think they're sitting around shooting the breeze.
Yeah. And by the way, not only is radio great where I booked some people, but out of television, going back, of course, Larry King, but just as one recent one on Shark Tank, Mr. Wonderful, Kevin O'Leary.
Yeah.
Yeah. We booked him just recently and he did a great job. The crowd loved him. And so TV personalities are always fun for the audiences where they want a name that they can identify. And Shark Tank is such a popular TV show. So he was wonderful. He did a great job.
Oh, yeah. I thought he was very good on with Bill Maher. I saw him interviewed. And Bill Maher is another one that really knows how to do an interview. And he gets he's more than a comedian. I mean, he goes deep and he brings up tough political questions, but yet he does it in a kind of a nice way where someone doesn't even know that they've been hit with something real.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's funny, I just flashed because we've had the pleasure of working with so many different people. Way back when Watergate occurred, we were booking all the Watergate people like G. Gordon Liddy, Colson.
He went on to be a good talk show host, G. Gordon.
Oh, yeah, exactly. No, exactly. But, you know, in the celebrity business, we book people that audiences are interested in, whether we agree or don't agree, doesn't matter whatsoever.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway,
a fun thing. I've tried to do a little bit of what Bill Maher does, and I've not been successful at it, which is to have kind of a left-right conversation and to have people on opposite sides of an issue come in and do do like a three-way. And, you know, I haven't quite cracked that nut yet in terms of making that work, but it's a very interesting skill. And I think it's particularly important now in these times because everybody's become so divided.
Oh, it's, you know, I'm searching for the words. It's really something that I have a hard time dealing with because back in the day, even if the politicians disagreed, there was more harmony in trying to work together. Now, everybody's, you know, batting them, sledgehammering over the heads. And it's kind of sad.
And they're all trying to destroy each other. It's not enough to actually defeat. I mean, back, I used to interview, I'm on the right politically, and I used to interview people on the left regularly, including some fairly big names like Gloria Steinem and,
oh, sure.
Noam Chomsky and the late Howard Zinn and Barney Frank here in Boston. And they would come on with me and we wouldn't agree maybe, and we might, we always had a laugh and we always had like a, you know, a reasonable dialogue, and we usually left as friends. Now that I'm getting back into this, they won't talk to me at all. And it's not me personally. Nobody talks to anybody now. You don't have liberals, just they will not do that kind of conversation now. They everybody only talks to their own little area, both left and right. I mean, everyone has their own little audience. And it's almost like you've got a parallel, you know, existence or something.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. Talking about politics, I remember way back when with Mom, we did the public relations for Simon & Schuster, the biggest book publisher, you know.
Of course.
And the number one author every month, that they were our clients. But thinking politics, you remember when Daniel Ellsberg was in the
news? Oh, yeah, sure. Yep.
Well, Ellsberg was our client with Simon & Schuster, yeah. And we enjoyed working with him. So it's kind of a fun thing being on our side, because we can work with people on all different sides, and you know, it's a really enjoyable kind of thing to do.
Oh yeah. And also, you know, those so-called sides have kind of changed around a little bit, and it's kind of a you know, it's an evolving thing. It's not quite as defined at any one point in time. Bruce Merrin, tell me a little bit of, I mean, how has the business changed recently? I mean, you know, what you're doing in a way is the purest form of communication. You simply present, you represent someone who wants to speak publicly, and you're able to get them a platform to do that. I mean, is that basic formula still in place? Has it changed at all in recent decades?
Well, the big changes that have happened, and you're asking a good question. The first big change that happened, I remember I was at an annual meeting in Minneapolis, and the speaker, it was a speakers conference. All the speakers bureau owners from around the world were there. And this one little petite woman came up and said, your business is going to change because in the next year, all of you are going to have websites. And we're saying, what's a website? We're going to have a website? She says, because back in the day, we would have these big magazines, these big colored magazines. All of our speakers would be in these magazines, and we'd send them out bulk rate all mailing. So The first thing that really revolutionized the speakers bureau industry was all of a sudden we have websites where we can feature our speakers on the websites with audio and video. So that was one thing that really revolutionized our business. But the other thing that happened when the big COVID crisis started in March of last year, our business became frozen for several months. There were no live presentations in any of the hotels. So I decided, you know, searched inside my head, like we're doing Zoom now and it's very common. But way back in the early COVID days, people weren't doing Zoom. But what I decided that we were going to go to all the meeting planners all over the world and say, look, maybe you can't do your conferences here in Vegas or New York or Miami. Do them on a Zoom platform, and we will book our speakers virtually. So I can tell you, we have booked hundreds of speakers in the last year and a half virtually. We're still booking some of the speakers live, but that's something that's changed drastically, you know, in our business. So instead of the business totally shutting down because COVID, when it was terrible, you couldn't even go to a hotel, you know?
No, so I mean, it's interesting because I don't know, have people adopted to that? Because that's what I'm doing. I mean, I do this show out of Boston where I live, up in my office, up in the attic. And I talk to people all over the world. I just have had a guest on recently from Israel. You know, I can really dial anyone up and they can come on with me. And it's really, I think, incredible. But I don't know, have people adopted to that? I mean,
they really have. Adopted. I mean, when I had mentioned Shark Tank and Mr. Wonderful, Kevin O'Leary, that one was a 1 hour virtual conference. And he was doing it. He had a big home in Canada where he was living. He calls me after, he says, Bruce, this is the easiest one I've ever done. I didn't have to get on an airplane. I didn't have to stay in a hotel. I didn't have jet lag. I did it right in my own home.
Yeah, so a lot of people,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So a lot of the speakers, I mean, certainly there's something magical about speaking to an audience that's in front of you.
Right.
But a lot of the people did adapt and they've done a really good job. So that's what we had to do as a speakers bureau, is let everybody know, all these meeting planners, hey, stage your meetings, just book our speakers virtually. And like Les Brown, you may have heard of Les Brown, you know, legendary Les Brown, probably one of the biggest motivational speakers. He too, recently, it was virtual. They couldn't do the conference live, even though they wanted to. So he did. He lives in Florida. He did it virtually. So it's just a new, new stream of how we can handle things, just like what you're doing.
Right, right. And I think some people have done well with it. Some people not so well. Maybe it's sort of like the move from silent pictures to talkies.
Yeah.
I think in the world of music, Mick Jagger has done very well with Zoom. Mm-hmm. He's done some amazing Zoom videos and music. He's like a force of nature anyway, but you know, the fact that he could be relevant and do this is incredible. And whereas other people, maybe not so great. So, I mean, it all depends on various intangible things, whether or not someone has the chops to do a Zoom and to pull it off. I don't know. It's interesting.
No, you're right. But as an example of the environment that we live in, just today they announced, it said, the Grammys, they're not staging the Grammys. That, you know, they were going to do it
because of the Omicron.
Yeah, they've canceled it. So we're living in an environment where a lot of these things are happening. And therefore, in the corporate world, if the corporations can't put on their usual event in person, then they are doing it virtually. So that's how we have adapted by, you know, working with these companies, say, okay, well, you can't do it here in Vegas or Miami or New York or Boston, but we can do it virtually. And they've adapted to doing that rather than just canceling the entire event. They've been doing that. And technically it's worked out, you know, really well. And this in the sports area, because we book so many sports stars, so many of them have done virtual. So it's right, just part of the new normal, as they say, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, obviously it's going to hurt the big conventions. You know, they're not going to have the, imagine how hotels are hurting and restaurants are hurting over this. And I don't know, you know, sometimes whenever there's a something like a pandemic or whatever, you know, it changes the social landscape in ways that you can't necessarily predict. And that can be both for the good and for the bad. I mean, I think one of the good things is that even though it's horrible that children aren't going in school and they have to wear those face coverings, at the same time, you know, there's a lot more homeschooling. There's a lot more Zoom, which means you could look into what the classroom is up to. And this is why parents are up in arms, because they can see what's some of the, you know, teaching going on inside the school where they couldn't see it before. So, you know, sometimes there's little unintended consequences that can be for the better in an event like this, and you need to find those and make something out of it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I just flashed, going back to thinking of the Carson days, I'd mentioned he's a genius, and Robin Williams. Here's a Robin Williams story that I think you'll enjoy. Yeah. I had a big corporate client that wanted to book Robin Williams, and they said, can you book him? I said, we've booked him before, give me the particulars. But they put in a caveat. They said, we'd like him to show up as part of the time as Mrs. Doubtfire. Oh, and I'm thinking, when I approached Robin, I thought for sure, he said, Bruce, are you kidding me? But he did it. He actually did it. And I was the biggest hit with everybody, because nobody over there thought that he would do it. But anyway, it was just, when I think about Robin, because what I love about Robin, he was such a great actor as well. Some of the films that he was in,
dramatic parts, serious parts. Yeah. I remember he did this movie with Robert De Niro. I forget the name of it, but it dealt with this man who had a mental problem that he was like in a semi-coma.
And then, I remember
that movie. So, yeah, I mean, he was very versatile and very, very bright and really had an impact. it's very tragic what happened.
It was just a brilliant actor. I mean, he really was. You know, he's an amazing stand-up comic, but in films, I mean, so many of his films were just unbelievable, you know, just incredible. Yeah.
What's going on now in the wonderful world of entertainment? It seems like they're all kind of playing it so safe. Everything is very generic. Everything, you know, they're remaking stuff and there's nothing, I don't see any great sparks of creativity and anything new happening.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you one area that you really hit the nail completely. One of my favorite movies of all time, it really impacted my life when I was a senior, was West Side Story.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, to this day, it's one of my top 10 movies.
Yeah.
Spielberg remade it. It wound up being a bomb.
Yeah,
now, critically, you know, some people may have liked it, but I'm just saying at the box office, West Side Story was a bomb. But what they did was what you were saying. They try to remake a film that already was a legendary classic, you know?
Exactly. It's hard to live up to that.
Yeah, so you're right, you know? Yeah, I agree.
Right. I mean, it would be good to see something really Disney also. I mean, they need to do something new that that gets back to their heyday of creativity, and instead of all these kind of weak remakes. Well, that's just an opinion there. Bruce Merrin, are you representing these days that's out there, and what are they up to?
Well, it really kind of goes from A to Z, but I'll tell you, because I'm a sports fan, mm-hmm. I'll tell you a couple of sports people that we've been working with recently, because a lot of the sports guys that I work, like, they're my heroes, you know, my heroes.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, sadly, we lost Kobe Bryant, but I was booking Kobe a lot until unfortunately left. But Magic Johnson is one. Jerry Rice, who's NFL Hall of Fame in San Francisco, and many people consider him the best wide receiver of all time. We're booking him. We booked Michael Jordan last year.
Can you get me Tom Brady?
Oh yeah, soon. I'm sure soon that will happen.
Yeah, right.
But you know, we really have a lot of fun. What was that?
He's huge here in Boston, obviously.
Yeah.
Even though he's left, I mean, he's still like a major figure here.
No question. No question. And it's funny. I was just smiling and thinking, because we booked, you named the biggest sports people, LeBron James, we booked them all. But I was just thinking, in your city, you were talking about in politics and some people that are not so charismatic. What about your head coach of the Patriots?
Oh, my God. Yeah, but yet he's legendary. I mean, he's
a lot of people will say either Vince Lombardi or him, the greatest of all time. But I'm just saying, isn't it funny? He doesn't have a lot of, you know, charisma, but yet he's the greatest coach, you know?
That's his charm. I mean, my childhood hero was Carl Yastrzemski, but
absolutely,
it's just
absolutely. I love Carl. He was great. So
I think for a while his grandson was grooming him to become a major league player, and I think he briefly was. But
yeah, I believe with the Giants. I believe he might have even played with the Giants this year. But I mean, Carl, he certainly was one of the greatest of all time. Now, I mentioned when I was a kid, I was in New York. I would go to Ebbets Field. Imagine this. As a kid, we had Mickey Mantle with the Yankees.
Oh, my God.
Willie Mays with the Giants, and then Duke Snyder of the Dodgers. And Joe DiMaggio recently had retired. So, I mean, some of the greatest center fielders of all time.
Roger Maris, right?
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. No, you're right.
And Sandy Koufax was around back then, too.
Yes. And we booked Sandy many times. But one of my favorites, because I am a Dodgers fan, was when Kirk Gibson hit that historic home run in the World Series.
Yeah.
To this day, we book Kirk Gibson a lot because it's probably the most famous home run in history. And oh my God, we book Kirk Gibson a lot.
And of course, Sandy Koufax is the legend of every Hebrew school kid.
Oh,
because
he
did not play on Yom Kippur in the World Series.
Right. No, that's absolutely right. And again, one of my biggest heroes. I'm a Dodgers fan my whole life. So you're absolutely right. Sandy, he has some of the greatest statistics of all time, but I've always loved, you know, booking the sports stars. And it's interesting sometimes with the meeting planners, what they'll ask for. Mm-hmm. When you think about the Chicago Bears,
yeah.
Walter Payton was one of the greatest of all time. Walter sure. Payton, one of the greatest runners of all time. I had this funny request. There's a candy company called Brock's Candy, B-R-A-C-H-S, yeah. Brock's Candy.
Yeah.
They came to me and they said, listen, we're having a big convention at McCormick Place in Chicago mm-hmm. because we are a candy company. Walter Payton's nickname was Sweets. That's what they called him, Sweets. Would Walter Payton consider coming and being at our booth for 2 days? And he doesn't have to speak, but he's going to sign footballs. Anyway, we did that for 2 days. And Walter Payton was one of my idols. And then we got Mike Ditka to come for that as well.
They should have named a candy bar after him.
That's right. You're absolutely right.
Here in Boston, they had Yaz Bread. So, so it's a great branding thing I noticed it also sports. I was in Israel a couple of years ago. It's huge there. They love basketball. And Bob Kraft here at the New England Patriots, he built a stadium right outside of Jerusalem. And they are so grateful for that. I mean, there's such, this is a country that doesn't always get the best PR. And for them to get that kind of attention, it's a huge thing over there. They love basketball and they love American sports.
No, that's a great story. I like that a lot. I mean, sports has always been a big part of my life. So that's why, thanks to my business, I've got to work with the legends. So I haven't mentioned yet, Jackie Robinson was the first one. My second one was Muhammad Ali. Ali, what really was exciting there.
Great man.
I was born, as they say, Louisville. You know, back then they call it Louisville.
Louisville.
So that's where I was born. And when I met Ali for the first time, I said, Ali, you're going to really love this. I was born in Louisville, just like you. So he got the biggest kick out of that. But we booked him, I would say maybe 20 engagements. And what a pleasure. He was just such a pleasure to
such
work
with. Such a force of nature. Yeah. What a great man. Very rare do you have somebody like that on the scene, you know, to totally break the mold of what we think conventionally of how people should be.
Yes. And also we're talking sports and we were talking politics. He really got a kick out of this. I happen to have been in Vietnam in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
He lost several years boxing because he really stood up for what he believed.
He did.
And he didn't box. And when I met him, I said, look, I was in Vietnam. I was there. I admire, Ali, what you've done because you stood up for what you think is right, even though you lost several years of boxing. So he really loved that even though I was in Vietnam, I could empathize where he stood, you know?
That's incredible. Yeah. I mean, I think he even spent a little time in jail over that.
That's right.
Conscientious objector. He's like, I'm not going to go overseas to kill, you know, minorities. I mean, it was like, it's just not what I do.
And he really believed that. I mean, I can tell you, I talked with him just like we're talking right here, you know, face to face.
Yeah.
I mean, he really believed that this was nothing on the acting side. He really believed it. And I told him that I really admired the fact that he stood up for what he felt was right.
He did. And that's a very rare thing to see, you know, and it was that great sacrifice to his career at the time. And, you know, it was a great risk. So, yes, I mean, truly one of the greats of modern times, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, Bruce, let my viewers and listeners know, if you'd like, a little bit about where they can reach you if they want to get information. You know, do you want to share, like, your website or anything like that?
Yeah, sure. That's very kind of you. And by the way, you're a delight. I really enjoyed being on with you, and I really appreciate it. Our website, which is the easiest way to get to us, and it's fairly simple. It's Bruce Marins, plural, BruceMarinsCelebritySpeakers.com. BruceMarinsCelebritySpeakers.com. Or they can just, if they Google Bruce Marin, I'll show up in all different types of ways. But I have real passion for the business, as you know.
I can see.
Just like you have passion for the talk radio business, and you're great at it. I love what I do. And because I love, I think it really shares, because we like to impact the lives of the people every day in the audiences, you know?
Indeed. Yeah. And it really comes across, Bruce. And let's let's hopefully work together. You know, I want to make my program available to all of the people you represent. I love conversation, and I like to put people up on the stations. And I think in the case of your guests, I could put them on YouTube. I'm a little careful with YouTube right now because they're censoring. Frankly, they're censoring conservative opinion. It's their right, but I'm not live streaming on them right now because of that. But I still have a pretty good YouTube channel that I post programs on if they're not too, you know, controversial for the YouTube people. But either way, it's live on the flagship station is Rumble, which is going huge. Rumble is a great, great network. And, you know, I'm looking forward to really launching this show. So please feel free to book people on my program. I'd love to have them on.
I would love it. And I just have to share one thing. We're both nice Jewish boys, right?
Yes, indeed.
Nice Jewish boys. But here's one story. I've got to share this with you. Please. Leopold Pfefferberg Page was my client. I met him in Beverly Hills. The client said, you got to meet him. He was a Schindler's Jew. He was one of the few Schindler's Jews that made it to safety.
Wow.
When we had lunch in Beverly Hills, he rolled up his sleeve and he showed me, you know, the marks. So he said, Bruce, I have this book I'm writing called Schindler's List. Can you help me? Long story short, we took Schindler's List to Spielberg. That's how Spielberg wound up making the movie.
Incredible.
And if you Google when Spielberg does his acceptance speech at the Oscars, one of the first things he does is thank Leopold Pfefferberg Page, my client. He says, without Leopold Pfefferberg Page, I never would have made Schindler's List. So I just thought you'd enjoy that story.
Oh, yeah. No, that's amazing. And, you know, I'd love to interview anybody from that era.
Sure.
Who has a story to tell. I know people are getting a little up in the years, but 60 Minutes just did an excellent piece on the Ritchie Boys.
Yes.
Who
yes.
were mostly German Jewish expatriates who fled the Nazis in the 30s and who went back in as intelligence agents and played a huge role in terms of defeating the Nazis because they could understand Germans and they could do to interrogation and they were able to get, kind of talk about, you know, extracting information from people. I mean, the work they did was incredible. Anyways, it was a great, great piece. So Bruce, listen, thank you so much. It has been really an honor and a pleasure to have you on. Feel free to join me anytime. And
thank you.
You know, God bless.
God bless you. And I love you. And from Vegas to Boston. Okay.
Indeed. All right. Bruce. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care. See you later.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.